Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted, definitely not salesy or boring, just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the stream here. Let me put Oliver in. Welcome, welcome. Happy Wednesday. Today is June 2nd. It's a new month. We are, I feel like we're the second half of the year, but we're not quite there yet. Oliver is tuning in. He's getting his camera woken up. Welcome
Technical
to
problems.
The show. That's all right. That's the fun of live TV, right? That's why people watch live TV, auto racing, all kinds of things, just to see, you know, what kind of crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, so instead of any crashes, you're just going to see my computer crash today.
We're going to have some technical crashes. Just keep it interesting, exciting. What's going on with you? Anything new and exciting before we jump in today?
No, it's just been a very busy week, nonstop. Obviously, I didn't have the public holiday like you guys had in the US, especially this long weekend. For us, it's been nonstop. But we actually have tomorrow as a public holiday, so I'm looking forward to daddy-daughter day tomorrow.
That's awesome. I love it. Yes. I'm glad you get a public holiday this week. A Thursday public holiday, that would be pretty exciting and fun. Kind of mix it up for sure. You know, three-day weekends are nice here, Monday off, but... Yeah, that weird random middle of the week thing would be cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But we got a lot in store for you today. So everybody that's kind of joined in and tune in with us for episode number 4 of Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt. Just to let you know, we are expanding. We have website domains. We have a website on the way. We have a podcast on the way. We have Instagram Live. We have Twitter on the way. So it's all going to be going that way and with lots more of free content, especially when it comes to supporting you out there, our audience, and everybody that's kind of tuning in to wanting to be a call center hero. No matter what level you're at, in what industry you're at, we're here to help you. And today we are going to be continuing on with our recruitment and onboarding process. Isn't that right, Jason?
Yep, it should be good. And I put it up on the screen. If you're watching this live, you're tuning in on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Facebook where it's currently being broadcast, please say hi in the comments. Let us know where you're coming from, where you're listening from, and then whatever questions you might have as we go through recruiting and onboarding or any feedback that you have. We like to see those, put them up on the screen whenever we can and put those in. So the last week, which was episode 3, we were talking about recruiting, which in most instances is way more than a 1 hour kind of free flowing conversation for sure, especially for organizations running call centers. There's so much to recruiting. So there's a few topics left after we got done. Oliver and I, chatted and said, all right, here's some more stuff that we can't gloss over. We've got to make sure we cover. So we're going to dive into those. We're going to see if we can get into onboarding, what that looks like, and then maybe even touch on compensation plans, depending on how we're doing on time and how all our technical stuff is doing. If you're tuning in, depending on how that looks, again, leave your comments and questions, whatnot. So let's talk about recruiting. So we talked a lot about the recruiting process, and obviously there's episode 3, which is available on all the platforms I mentioned where it was streamed live. You can see the replays on there, and Oliver mentioned we'll get it into a podcast format sometime soon. But we talked about everything from the, you know, knowing who you want to get on the bus, to the job description, to recruiting strategies, to techniques to use, to ways to do interviews, to the, you know, virtual versus in-person and some of the challenges, and then also the benefits of being able to do those kind of things. And then one part where we want to make sure that we cover is the aspect of actually getting people into the recruiting process, into the funnel, which would be that advertising, the job postings, and really getting that out there and filling the pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be covering all of those. Jason, just one thing, if you wouldn't mind kicking off, because I am absolutely having some technical difficulties and I'm going to switch computers. So I'll be back in 2 minutes.
All right. We'll see you soon. So as we go through this conversation for the recruiting process, one of the things is the advertising, and it's really important to have that blend. And I think we might have touched on it last time. Where do you do short job postings? Do you do long job postings? What does that look like for you? And what makes sense? And I always love to experiment. So there's, you know, two different ways. There's the really short post. And I think I even mentioned this last week, where a lot of times when somebody does a really short post, and I've seen those like on a Craigslist or on an Indeed or something like that, where it's just really small, is that it's sometimes in the get rich quick category. Sometimes it's in the, like, this is, okay, how do you make a ton of money as fast as possible? Just show up and we'll teach you what you need to do. And that can be okay, but you've got to be careful of who that attracts into the screen, into the stream. And so that's one part that's important. And there's nothing wrong with that. So depending on what you're recruiting for, you're looking for, that's important. You might go with the long one, which is the other format. One of the big things, and this is where we kind of touched on it before, is that it starts with who do you want to be in your sales team? Who are you looking to recruit? Who are you looking to fill seats with? Personality type, behaviors, experience. What are you looking for? You're looking for that seasoned veteran who is either they want lots of details so they know what they're getting into so they can check all those boxes, or is it the seasoned veteran who short and sweet, and then they're going to be attracted to a short post because they just want to show up and do what they do best. And so those are the kind of the two different perspectives. Do you want somebody who's new? If somebody's new, maybe a short post works well. Maybe a long one would help as well. And so the key is knowing who you want and then testing it and then doing that side by side, looking at what makes the most sense, what's working, try different platforms. Depends on where you're at. Depends on, you know, what's accessible. Depends on where your market is. A lot of times people are in, the people that you might want for your call center are more Craigslist people. They might be more Indeed. They might be more Monster. That part just depends. And so you want to focus on that. And it looks like Oliver is back. And here we go. He's rocking and rolling. And so, Oliver, as you were going through that, I was just covering, you know, kind of recapping what we talked about before and adding to it, where different posts, long posts, short posts, putting it all over, knowing where your market is, knowing where people are going to be looking for the type of jobs that you have, and then how to advertise for that. And I will say that one of the things that a lot of companies don't consider and keep in mind is they figure they'll just be able to put a job post out there. It'll be easy. It'll be free. It'll be cheap. They don't have to spend any money on it. They don't have to put any marketing budget behind their job posting and advertising. And they'll just be able to fill recruiting pipeline, right? Fill the appointments and everything. In some job markets, that might work. But one of the big things is for companies to be mindful of how much money, time and effort it will take into the advertising portion, what kind of budget they need to have, because it could potentially spend a lot of money, could cost them a lot of money to do it, which is okay, but you've got to treat that like any other marketing function, right? What's that cost per acquisition?
No, 100%. And I think you hit a really good point there, because there's so many contact centers out there in this space at the moment that, all right, they do have budget to recruit, because that's the whole point. It's the aim of the game. They want to kind of increase the seats. But, you know, if you're not doing it right and you are putting bums on seats, you're going to end up throwing money out of the door, because you're going to have to recruit again if those people aren't fit for purpose or they aren't the right people that you're bringing into the business in the first place. So my advice to really any contact center that's out there when you advertise, you know, be clear in your advertisement about the type of candidate you're looking for. Be honest and upfront. I worked with a couple of contact centers recently that they say, we're looking for this, we're looking for that, with the hopes they're really going to get, you know, something else over here, but they want to sell this over here to get those kind of people. And you're just wasting your time and wasting your money. At the same time, it's also as well down to the contact center to make sure they give you enough time to recruit in the first instance, because, you know, we all know that businesses move quickly. They want to ramp up. They want to increase their headcount. You know, you've got to do things the right way. There's the correct way of doing something, rather than just rushing it, doing it for the sake of doing it. And as you say, putting bums on seats and ticking a box to say, hey, we got 30 people in here. Good job. Well done. Thanks very much. But the proof is in the pudding, whether they make it through training,
whether they make it through onto the floor. They have, you know, good speed to competency, which we are definitely going to come onto a little bit later. But I think it's really important to remember that it is, and I've said it a moment ago, and I'll re-say it again, is it's not about a bum on a seat. Target the right person. Make sure you do the right spend, and you do not waste time just getting somebody for the sake of getting somebody. We all see it. It happens in every center. And I've worked with somebody recently that I remember specifically on one call we had. He goes, my team don't challenge me when I tell them I need X amount of people on the floor. And if they actually feel that somebody's not right, they put them on the floor just purely because I've said I need X amount of people.
Oh, man. Oh, that's terrible.
But the thing is, though, I think they're also worried about making that decision. And that's one thing, especially I've seen recently, is people are afraid to make decisions because they're afraid of losing their jobs. They're afraid of being put in the wrong space. And I think that happens in the call center. But we should all be allowed to make mistakes, right? We're all human. Everybody makes mistakes, but we shouldn't be judged by our mistakes.
Well, and it's interesting as you're talking about it, the one thing which I used to say on my podcast before, especially when it was the Sales Experience podcast, is I used to finish it by saying that everything in life is sales. And I truly mean that. And a lot of times people think sales. So they think I got this prospective client, I did some marketing, I'm talking to them, I sell them something, they swipe their credit card, that's my sale. But when you look at recruiting, it's that same thing. There is some marketing, then there's a pipeline, there is a good fit, who's the ideal client, which is then that candidate, there's some filtering that goes on. And again, like most people who have been in sales long enough or running sales teams knows that if they just let their sales team go uncontrolled and sell anybody and everybody, you will get a lot of terrible clients that are probably not happy, that probably cancel, that probably want their money back, that were set the wrong expectations because the salesperson just told them whatever they wanted to hear in order to pay. And so when you take that and then you apply that to recruiting, it's the same thing. You don't want high turnover, just like you wouldn't want a high cancellation of new clients. And so you've got to treat it the same way and then look at the right expectations, the right enrollment process, the right follow-up, the right nurture. And so, which then goes into the onboarding process. But before we get there, I know you wanted to talk about referring a friend as a strategy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of call centers out there that do it. And I actually follow a lot of the clients that I work with on Instagram. And you see it all the time about, you know, recruiting here, hire this person, hire that person. And, you know, they have incentives to hire your friends in the workplace. And I've seen so many different ones. You know, you get $100 for bringing somebody in. I remember I worked for a company at one point. They said you get $50 for bringing them in. You get $100 if they pass training. And then you get another $300 if they're there 6 months. There's so many different incentive programs out there to bring your friends into the workplace. But on the other hand, a lot of people don't like to do it because they don't like to have the fact that their friend is coming in on their shoulders under their recommendation. And what if they're bad? What if they don't perform? And I've spoken to a lot of people recently that are in full support of the Recommend a Friend program and people that don't like it whatsoever. So therefore, they'll take it under advisement. They won't really offer anything in terms of actually putting somebody through the door. But I want to put it out to you, you know, if there's anyone out there that's used that system in the past, if there's anybody that's kind of spoke about it, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts and your comments on Recommend a Friend. Me, personally, I think it's a very important program because, you know, we say it all the time is call centers are the factories of our time. And there are so many people that come in and out. If you know somebody reliable, and that's where the long-term incentivization comes in to make sure that, you know, you get $50 on day one, $100 on, you know, week three or week four, whenever they pass training. But 3 months down the line, that's when you get the big reward. And that's the way a lot of commissions work these days to show that, you know, you're doing the right thing. You're bringing the right clients on board. You're selling the right products. Or most importantly, you're selling the right way. You know, we see it in the past where some salespeople will lie and they'll tell fibs about the product they're selling just to make the sale. But there are companies now that incentivize the long-term sales cycle to make sure that you're doing it the right way. And that's the same with Recommend a Friend. In my opinion, if you're bringing somebody in, do a long-term reward scheme to make sure we bring the right people in. And again, you've not got somebody just bringing in 10 people to make, you know, $300-$400 a head, because that way you're going to see churn, in my opinion.
Yeah. And what's interesting on the other side, right? So you were talking about people might not want to bring in people, refer their friends, because it's kind of their name attached to it. I've seen the other side, which call centers should be mindful of, which is where they do a refer a friend. And then what happens is people don't want to refer their friends because they themselves aren't winning or don't trust that they can win or don't see enough of the opportunity. And they don't want to bring somebody else into that if they're not fully successful. And so the challenge is, and obviously what you've got to do is you've got to make sure people are winning. I've seen that where companies are like, okay, we're not winning, but if we just had a lot more salespeople, then we would win. It's like, no, no, no. If your team isn't winning, they're not going to tell their friends about this opportunity. And so you've got to make sure it's the right balance. You do it at the right time and offer that. Otherwise, it will literally fall flat, because what you'll find is that everyone, by not referring their friends, is telling you they aren't necessarily happy being there either.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think, you know, that says a lot and kind of does a great segue into the next piece, really. It's like, who turns up on day one? And for me, you know, day one acquisition of your new hires is just as important as completing training and putting them on the phones. We see so many drop-offs between recruitment and the actual onboarding of team members. And the thing is, it's not a big chunk of people, but it adds up. You know, one, two heads every time that you do an induction, that adds up over the year. But where does it fall down? Does it fall on your recruiters for not following through on the correct procedure? Does it fall on your HR? Does it fall on the managers that recruited them in the first place? For me, it's a whole magnitude of things. And I think people are afraid to actually phone their employer and say, hey, look, I'm not going to be coming in on day one. I've been offered another opportunity. It pays more money and this is where I'm going to go. And that's usually why it happens. Or they have a fear of going into the job or something like that. But then it falls on the recruiter's top to kind of backfill that position, because, you know, you wanted that specific number of headcount on day one. Or do you factor in day one drop-offs? I'd love to hear somebody's thoughts on, you know, if they actually factor in, you know, attrition for day one, just when you're bringing in new hires. You know, do you hire 30 people in the hopes that you get 25 walk through the door?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, and anybody watching this, if you're watching this live, put the comments in. If you're watching the replay on any of the platforms, you can also put the comments in, which we'll be alerted about. We can dialogue back and forth. Again, like Oliver mentioned at the top of the show, we're working on the website, working on all the fancy stuff we're adding all the time, but you can find us if you're listening to this in the replay on the podcast. Obviously, you can't leave a comment there. You can always reach out to us. We'll give our contact info at the end, which is easy. Love to hear from everybody. It's just so fascinating to collect kind of what others see in the industry. You know, what's interesting to me, Oliver, as you're talking about it, is really that fundamental, because I see this a lot, is why is that happening? If you, like, and depending on the scale of what you're doing, but let's say 10, right? So I recruited, hired 10 people. They accepted offers. 10 people are supposed to show up Monday. And if not all 10 show up, if 9 show up, why didn't that 10th person show up? And then, you know, who's responsible, like you asked. I'm just curious what you think, like some real examples so that people listening or watching can be like, oh yeah, maybe that's me, right? Because I know I have clients where that happens. They got a class of 10, 7, 8 show up, and they're just like, we don't know why. People are flaky. I'm like, maybe that's not it. What do you think?
So I'm going to give you kind of the top 3 reasons why I've seen people fall off the radar from day one.
Before day one, right?
Yes, sorry. They okay. Do not turn up. So they've been offered a job. They picked up the phone. They've gone, yes, I'm coming. I'll be there. Thank you so much for the job offer. This is why. Top 3 reasons. And then I'm going to give you a couple of tips on top of that of how we can kind of make sure this doesn't happen in the future. And also, yeah, most importantly, how we can kind of reduce the number. Because it's always going to happen. It's not something you can avoid completely for the rest of your, you know, recruitment lives. It happens. We all know that. You know, if we've got any recruiters on here, how many job opportunities have you seen fall through the windows because they've not turned up on day one? So top number one, they've got another job offer. Now, this is the first and foremost, because you've got to think, when people are applying for jobs, they apply for multiple jobs. okay? And we see it out there. We see it happen. I mean, I've been in those shoes before where I've applied for 10, 15 jobs where I've been worried when I was starting out in a call center or whatever it was I was doing, thinking, oh, I'm going to be out of work if I don't apply for a job, or I'm miserable in my current job. I need to apply for, you know, 10 jobs and see what happens. And what happens is they'll go through the application process. It's kind of like dating to an extent and not being exclusive, you know, and then you narrow it down to what you want. So you may get 3 or 4 offers on the table. The problem we've got is people don't like to say no. So if somebody phone me and say, you know, oh, we're going to offer you this position, you go, yeah, okay, I'll take it. You know, or I'll come back to you tomorrow and I'll let you know. But if they say yes, but then they get offered a job tomorrow, which is even better, you see a large majority of those people not calling the recruiter and not speaking to the previous job to say, hey, I'm not going to tell. And I'm not saying this happens at high level. When you get onto the fact of high level and you've got managers, you've got leaders, you've got C-suite, you've got directors, you go all the way up, you know, that's a very different ball game, because usually there's recruiters involved. You've got teams of people involved in this whole recruitment process. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, you see a lot more communication between managers and directors and leaders at a senior level to make sure these people come in, because you spent so much money recruiting. And also, to be fair, you probably paid your recruiter a chunk of money to get this person through the door. Unfortunately, when it comes to your, you know, your guys on the phone or your frontline leadership teams, you know, that you're bringing in a cohort, and that's not to kind of diminish the job role or whatever it is, but you're bringing them in with a group of other people, they don't always necessarily need or feel the need to contact those people and say, hey, look, you know, you've got another 20 people coming in. Am I just a number on your door? I'm not coming. Right. That's number one. Okay. Number two is lack of communication from the business side to the person that you're recruiting. And I've seen it happen oh so often where they've been offered the job, they've been sent out the welcome letter. Great. You're starting in 3 weeks on Monday. See you there. And that's it. Nothing else is sent. Maybe they're sent an application form to fill out when they start. Maybe they're sent out other information. But lack of communication is definitely something that stands out when it comes to people not turning up on day one. And that's something that shows. And the first and foremost is people just change their mind. You know, they get, and when I say they change their mind, is they get countered by their existing business. And this is something that you see quite a lot is, you know, they accept a job and they won't quit their old job until they've got their offer letter, they've got their contract, they've got their information, and they won't tell their boss. And then what will happen is they'll go and tell their boss in their existing job, hey, I got another job, I'm out, thanks very much, I'll see you later. And the counter offer comes. Now, it depends on the company, it depends on who you are, and it depends on the person. And the first and foremost is you've got to look at it is if they're being counted, obviously they are good at what they do and the company doesn't want to lose them. So we know as a business you've made the right choice because you've obviously hired somebody good. For me, I always think that's a problem when somebody's counted. Now, if they're leaving for usually one of the I like to call the three M's when you're leaving a job, it's money, motivation, or management. Those are usually the three reasons why people leave jobs in the first instance. God, I feel like I'm giving a monologue here. but those are the three key factors. Now, there's a lot of different reasons out there, but those are the three that I always believe in, the three M's. If money is a factor as to why you're leaving, if you've been sold something because you're about to get paid a lot more, and you've asked for a pay rise in your current job and you've asked for a pay increase and the company has said no, then all of a sudden when you say, hey, I'm leaving, and they offer you a pay rise, for me, alarm bells go off. And the reason for that is because why has it taken you to leave your job role to be counted? And this goes to everybody out there, guys. Please remember this, right? If you're leaving a company and you've asked for benefits, perks, whatever it might be, and all of a sudden your company counter you and give you what you wanted, why is it taken for you to leave to make that happen? And is that a company you want to stay in? And that, for me, speaks volumes. I've been on the receiving end of that before. And they said, oh, no, we'll match the salary they've given you. I asked for that 6 months ago and you said no. Why did you say 6 months ago? Well, we didn't really want to give it to you. All right. And this is the way it goes, you know. And unfortunately, right, these are the three things that happens. I mean, what's your opinion on those three key areas?
So, yeah. And again, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, as you're going through that list, I look at it completely like a sales process. And when sales are done incorrectly, meaning either low closing rate or a high cancellation rate of people who already signed up, then that's some failure in the process. So if people aren't showing up for the first day after accepting an offer, that means somewhere in the recruiting slash sales process, something broke down. I love the point number two that you made, which is where I see this a lot, which is, congratulations, here's your welcome letter. We'll see you in 3 weeks. And then they just assume that person is still excited and they've moved on. They're recruiting at a high volume, or they're just bad at follow-up as a company or setting up processes or being empathetic. Here's one of the challenges I see with a lot of recruiting side is the recruiter, the HR, the sales manager, whoever the hiring manager, whoever that person is, has forgotten what it's like to be on the other end trying to get a job and being excited, nervous, worried. Did I make the right choice? Just like a lot of people in sales have forgotten what it's like to be a customer because they've been doing it for so long. And so they're desensitized to it. And they just forget the disclosures, the expectation setting, all those little things that will help somebody not have buyer's remorse. Because again, if you're recruiting somebody, you don't talk to them for 3 weeks. Hey, show up on Monday. That's 3 weeks of thinking about it and second guessing and doubting and wondering if they made the right choice. And then never mind, I'm just not going to show up. It's just easier. Or like you said, maybe they're playing the field and they lined up several dates for that Monday. And they're just going to go with whatever one's the best and just ghost the rest of them and not even show up, right? And so for me, except for some rare cases, but if it's a common trend, if you're losing people between recruiting and showing up day one, every time in the classroom, you as an organization are missing something in the enrollment process of that new person in setting the expectations, the follow-ups, the nurturing. Like you said, when you're going after higher level executives, there's a lot of follow-up. There's a lot of pressure on the organization to fill that spot. That spot is very critical. So there's a lot of communication, over-communication, calls on Saturdays. Hey, you all set for Monday? Like, what do you need? Do you want your own stapler? Like, what can I get for you? Because I want to make sure you show up and that you're happy and that you do everything. You fulfill all of my hopes and dreams of this role because we really need you. Then you get to that frontline person like you're talking about, which is, yeah, hopefully you show up. Otherwise, you know, we've got 50 people. But again, if you have 50 people showing up and 10 don't show up, you're missing something. You're doing something wrong.
Hey, it's Oliver Catt of Cutter and Catt, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success that you want. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps between where you are now and where you would like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's anything from training to systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything else in between, email info@callcenterconfidence and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we may be able to help. Now back to Jason and I chatting about call centers.
Absolutely. And I think that's where your money gets wasted. That boils back to the comment you made earlier about throwing money out the door and throwing it down the toilet, is that if you are bringing these people in, you're spending all this time recruiting these people just not to show up. If you want them there, you invest your time just as much as you invest with anybody else. And you touched on a very good point there about, what can I get you? Do you want a stapler? Do you want this? I worked at a company once that would send you, when they hired, it was manager level at up. Because at that point you were traveling, you were on the road. So they give you a phone, they give you a laptop, they give you all this kind of stuff. They used to send out in the recruitment process a welcome pack order form. And I think this was fantastic. And they'd send out, what laptop do you want? Do you want a Windows machine or a Apple machine? Would you want an Android phone or an iPhone? And people would get the choice signing up. And the thing is, you'd feel that way. They'd even give you a choice of like 6 carry bags for the laptop. So you could pick a blue, a green, or with a pattern on it, or whatever it might be. And I love that. And I think that was great. And there was a company that I worked for, and this was day one. You turned up and as part, and this was the frontline teams working on the phones. I think I mentioned this maybe last week. You got a water cup, a coffee mug, because you know you weren't allowed open drinks out on the floor. So we made, and it was all branded, a branded straw, branded pen, branded notebook, branded mouse mat that was all yours. And that makes such a big impact for a new starter at any level. It's like, hey, thanks for joining. Welcome to the team. We love you. This is yours. And for me, that speaks volumes because, again, you are showing an investment in your team. Whereas other than that, you get a lot of people who tell up on day one, thanks for coming. Here's our induction.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'll keep saying this because I think it's so valid, is think about yourself as a customer, right? All of us, anybody watching this, if you're in charge of a call center, recruiting, anything like that, think of yourself as a customer buying something significant or important, right? So let's say you're buying a car and you buy a car, you go through the process, everything's great. You drive away with the car and you literally never hear from them again. It was such a transaction. They got your money. Maybe you feel a little gross afterwards, but you got your car, but it's a transaction. You never hear from them. Now imagine if you got a welcome kit from them afterwards, if you got a phone call, they're nurturing, they're checking in. They just want to make sure you're happy. That would be a different experience. Again, if we apply that to the recruiting, right? So you're selling somebody on showing up. They show up and you're just like, cool, my job is done. Like, here we go. Now we're just over. I don't have to do anything special for you ever again. Versus making someone feel a part of your family. And when you don't do those onboarding things, like the cool stuff you're talking about, whatever scale that is, when you don't do those things and you just hope, well, I'm just paying people. They're making money. I don't have to do anything special for them. Then they're not going to stay at the same rate. They're not going to buy into your culture and your mission and your vision, and you're going to have a lot of turnover. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. I'm right there with you on that one. Completely and utterly behind it. And I think, you know, all of these things, everything that you can do, that you know you can do, you should do. And it will all go a long way to showing commitment to the people that you're bringing on board. And also it makes them feel valued. We want all of our employees to feel valued. You know, there are so many companies out there that have value statements, mission statements. We follow these lines of code or whatever it might be. But how many companies actually follow them? How many companies believe in their values, their motto? And that's something you see. And the thing is, if you have your team believe in it and you believe in it, then that's when you start to make a difference. That's when you start to really change your onboarding process, the way you work, the way you bring people in, the way you train them, and you embed it from day one. And I think that's something that you can do. I've worked for a company over the last couple of years that it's all about the brand, 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 brand. But the thing is, that brand is embedded in you. And it's not about the codes. It's not about the values, the morals, and things like that. You are the brand. And the way they do that is they make you feel like you are selling that product. And when somebody mentions that product, that's you, no matter what you do. And I think that's really important. And I love the way they've done that. I love the way they've achieved that with all of their staff. And their staff are so proud to work for that company that people don't want to leave. And when people do leave, they're leaving for a reason. They're leaving for something because they want to set up their own business. They want to do their own thing. And, you know, I know people that have worked for that company for 15, 20, 25 years because of what they've managed to achieve and what they've managed to do whilst working for that company. Whether you want to stay with the company for 25 years, that's up to you because that's a long time.
But you could, right? When it's done in a certain way, then the buy-in from everybody and everyone's rowing the right direction. And we'll talk about this as we, you know, progress through these episodes, and we'll talk about challenges and change management. And it's hard to get people to change if you have to pivot, if you have to change anything, if people aren't bought in, because then they don't see why and they're just going to jump ship. So what's interesting as you're going through this and talking about it, I've done a lot of training over, especially over the last year and a half in this COVID era, for people who are looking for jobs, right? So I deal obviously with salespeople, but I'll end up in some networking groups where I'm talking about getting a sales job So how do you get that next job? What should you look for? How do you position it? What should you know? And what's interesting too is from the recruiting standpoint, from the recruit standpoint, as a candidate, if anybody's watching this and you're looking to get a sales job or you want to be in sales or you want to change jobs, is how a company handles the recruiting process, the conversations, the follow-up, and then that gap between hiring to day one and that onboarding will tell you pretty much and will reflect pretty much exactly how they treat their customers, what their culture is, and what that sales process will be like. And so if there's those big gaps in communication, usually that's coming from the top down, which means they're probably not great at communicating in general, which maybe they're not communicating with their employees or their customers. And so is that somebody you want to work with? Yes or no? Maybe it is. Yes. You're like, okay, that fits perfectly. I'm okay with that. Or no, I want to be in part of something that's way more involved, right? And when you show up that first day and you have to go find your own pen and piece of paper to take notes on because they don't even give you anything, that trend will not get better, right? Everyone's on their best behavior on the first day. And if that's what you're getting, it's like, it generally doesn't get better than that first impression.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you say, I think one of the great things, we are going to come on to training and inductions and things like that. But as you say, on your best behavior on day one, especially if you have a elongated onboarding process, which a lot of companies do nowadays. You know, I've worked with companies that will onboard you and get you trained up in 2 days, but I've also worked with companies that will onboard you and get you up and running in 6 weeks. Wow. It's a very big difference. But the good thing about the long one is, can they really hold their best behavior and do their real characteristics come out within those first 6 weeks? And that's something to bear in mind. You know, if you're questioning the type of person you're bringing on board and who they are, trust me, by the end of training, you'll know. So, you know, sometimes it is worth taking the risk and worth taking the gamble on somebody you're on the fence with, because you never know. They may prove you wrong in training because they're just nervous in the induction. Like, you know, sure. when you go to an interview, it's like taking a test. Everybody gets nervous taking a test. I know I do. You know, when I take my driver's exam and things like that, it's always nerve-wracking. But when you get at the other side, are you a better driver? Does what you put down on paper make you a better driver? It's the same with training. You know, what you're doing in an interview, speaking to somebody about telling them how good you are on the phones or how good you are at leading a team, you won't know that until you're sat in front of another group of leaders with a group of people telling you what to do and how to do it.
So what do you think, you know, what are some best practices for day one, like just universal, like whether it's a 2 day training, onboarding and training induction, right? Whatever term might be, or it's that 6 weeks one. What do you see as some good best practices? What have you seen from the wide range of call centers? Let's chat about that. Like that day one, what's a good kickoff?
For me, the first one is know your surroundings. I've been privy to a lot of conversations, especially on day one, where I've been in as a consultant or as a trainer. And I've watched people come in and very quickly, how should I say, you know, I was thinking about keeping up their characteristics and keeping up their values. By lunchtime, they're already trying to speak to people the wrong way or rub people up the wrong way. So for me, the first one on day one is know who you're speaking to. Don't say anything out of character until you know who is around you, because I'm telling you, if you are a new hire on day one, everybody is watching you. I remember being at a company and there was about 25 people brought in for this one induction, and everybody got comfortable. Everybody got relaxed. The trainer did an amazing job of making everybody feel just chill on day one. And I was watching and I was chatting to the call center manager at lunchtime as they asked me what my thoughts were and my feelings were on the new hire group, how the trainer was doing and everything else. And one of the new hires came out. Now, they'd known that I was in training, so whether they assumed I was a consultant, whether they assumed I was a trainer, a manager, whatever it might be, they turned around and they said, do you smoke? And I was like, what, normal cigarettes? And they just kind of shook their head at me. And I was like, no, I do not. And this was somebody coming up to me as a consultant, the call center manager, and basically trying to score some weed at lunchtime on day one.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, it's things like that. So for me, big one, new, you know, mind your surroundings, watch everybody, and things like that. What about you? Have you got any advice on that side, Jason?
I mean, if we're talking about the, for the candidate side, for like the new hire, I mean, yeah, it's, I think the tough part is, you know your surroundings, know who you're talking to, know who you're dealing with, know what's expected. But I always just default to the authentic piece, right? Like if we put in here some woman named Alexandra Cat, I don't know any relation to you. Yeah, and yes, I do.
Your wife's listening. Hi.
it's your lovely wife supporting. You know, she put in here, I asked my receptionist how the new hires interviewees behave when they don't think anyone is listening. And again, like that's what we, you know, from our side, from a company side, always watching, listening. I sit in trainings and I see how everyone acts and I see how casual, what happens. And again, it's that authenticity piece. Like when things kind of, the nervousness goes away, people will act like they act. And that's how you get, that's what you get. And if you're that candidate, if you're that new hire, then you want to be you. The question is you going to be a good fit?
Yeah.
Like that person in your training experience, like maybe that's not a good fit. But just keeping in mind, always watching, always observing. And I think that day one intro, I think it's really like from the company side. And what's important is setting the right expectation, making people feel welcome. And again, this is the biggest thing I work with recruiting, training people on, especially trainers, is after you've done a handful of training at a company, I promise you forget, if you're not careful, what it's like to be that new person. Because you just know everything. You know where the bathroom is. You know where the kitchen is. You know when the breaks are. You know what the options are for lunch. Like, you know all that. And you've forgotten what it's like to be new with like deer in the headlights, just lost and confused and worried. And you don't know how to, like, what are we even doing for lunch today? And so remembering that, take a step back, remember what it's like to be very new, and then build that into your day one process of explaining all of those things. Even such that, like when I used to do trainings, what we would do just to make it easier for the first 2 days is we would bring lunch in. If it was a small group, there was companies I worked for where we would take people to lunch because it was smaller groups and, you know, kind of longer term. Otherwise, we would bring lunch in. But we would tell people in advance of that, before they even started. So, you know, before day one, we tell them, hey, by the way, we're going to cater the first 2 days of lunch. So you don't have to worry about bringing a lunch, finding lunch, just that distraction, because we just want to make it easy. Plus it's great, you know, for us, it was great team building. Everyone sit around, get to know each other. It's kind of casual. But keeping those things in mind, like literally you forget if you're not careful. Like, I just know where the bathroom is, but I forget that nobody else does.
Joey, you bring up a very good point there. And I think it's something that people don't do. I mean, don't get me wrong. Call centers do, 9 out of 10 provide lunch on day one for all their new hires. And that's something that I've seen become a standard. But what you touched on is they don't let the guys know. They don't tell them. That
they bring their lunch anyway, and then they look stupid or they're kind of upset. They didn't know. They stressed about a lunch, and then here's lunch.
Yeah, and maybe it's part of the welcome letter. Maybe it's part of the communication. Maybe it's in there somewhere. And I think that's a really great idea because, like I said, they do provide lunches. They do provide all these things, whether it's sandwiches or whatever it might be. I mean, obviously, they're not going to cater to everybody's needs, but obviously, please bear that in mind out there. But also, as well, like companies as well like to do like Pizza Fridays. My last job in London, the company I worked for, a great company, used to do Pizza Fridays, and it was great at the end of training. I used to love it. Just go and hit Domino's. Oh, that was a great day.
but it's that communication too, right? It's about telling people, hey, by the way, like on Tuesday or Wednesday, by the way, we're doing Pizza Fridays. So you don't need to bring a lunch unless you don't want pizza. We're going to do that. And letting them know in advance, because again, most companies go, okay, of course we do Pizza Friday. And they just totally forget.
Yeah. I think that's great. No, good point. Very, very good point. So guys, please note, tell your new hires you're providing lunch.
And tell them everything. Over communicate. Same thing with the sales process. Over communicate. Set the expectations. Explain everything. Just like you would in a good sales process, if you want a long-term customer, same thing you would do in that day one. Show people around. I mean, one of the best things, depending on what your structure is like, give them a tour, introduce them to some people, help them feel a part of something instead of just a number, right? Like I see a lot of training rooms. It's the first room as you enter an office, and those people never get out of this little bubble. And then it's like treated like this weird little group that nobody see. They kind of see in the hall, but nobody knows who they are, and they don't know who anybody is. And it's like, does anyone care if we make it or not? Versus showing that you really want them to, assuming you do, unless you're running a call center where you're just like, whatever, we'll hire 50 people. If five make it, whatever. We don't want to get knowing anybody's names and get attached. I don't know.
I've seen a lot of companies go in there on day one. They have usually scheduled meetings with the clients that I've worked with before. And even when I've been running training teams, we always made a point of actually scheduling on day one, usually either first thing in the morning or in the afternoon. You'd have your senior management team go in there, maybe not the team leaders and the supervisors at first. Maybe you drag that out a little bit. But I think it's very important to have senior management, you know, your call center managers, directors, et cetera, if they're available and if they're free, just to go in and do an introduction. And bearing in mind, if you're going in and doing an introduction, you know, as managers, you know, if you're laughy, jokey, jovial, be that person in the meeting, be who you are. Don't cross any lines that you would normally cross on the floor where it's acceptable. I've seen some HR managers have heart attacks with what some directors have said, just because they've been fun, you know, and they've been the normal sales. And it's like, can we at least get them through day one before you show your true colors?
But that always goes to the balance, right? So independent of HR's concerns about whatever might be said, because I've seen that as well. But again, you know, that goes to the debate of like, but what's authentic? What's the company culture? What are they getting into? Who's going to vibe with that, right? Like, you don't necessarily want to, you know, sugarcoat that or delay it or have someone not be themselves HR compliant in that dog and pony show. Because then when the new hires get out on the floor, they're like, wait, that's not the dude who came in here. Who's this guy? Like, you know, I don't want to be here. Or I love it. This is even better than I thought, right? So there's a balance. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is going out to all of our senior managers out there. Look, you know, you've already hired them on the fact that, especially in the sales environment, you know, you've already hired them on comp plans. You've already hired them on telling them how much they're going to earn. Just don't go in there and overinflate it. I've seen other managers go in there and go, look, you know, we told you you're going to earn 60 grand this year. Actually, do you know what? You're going to come in now. You're going to earn 120 grand in a month. you know, and all of a sudden you start to get everybody's like, and then like they get out on the floor and they're walking away with like $2,000. Set your expectations. But I know compensation is a big piece for you, Jason, because you've seen it. You've been there. You've been part of it. And that's something that kind of, you know, is, I know it's a big passion of yours, especially in recruitment, day one and everything else, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting now that you mention it. I have seen some of those meetings where somebody will come in at the top or, you know, near the top or at the very top of the organization and get everyone pumped up and throwing all these pipe dream ideas and all these great things that are going to happen in the company that, you know, don't. They're excited about it. But then, you know, everyone gets upset because like, wait, what happened to this? What happened to that? Like, what happened to all these things that were mentioned on that day one? And I've sat in those meetings going, no, please stop. Just please stop talking. Like, no, please stop saying those things. That can be rough. So just be careful. Like you said, if you're a senior manager in those meetings. So compensation, you know, I think one of the big things, and I think this is going to be another carryover topic that will go into next week's episode, you know, is this discussion about compensation plans. One of the things that just blows me away, even to today, even to right now, we're talking June 2021, is how many companies, how many clients I work with, how many clients I don't work with because they're just not even ready or not even wanting to get help, where they don't have a structured compensation plan. Yes, there's a base salary. Maybe there's some kind of bonus, but that bonus is literally like in a spreadsheet that the reps have to fill out themselves to figure out how much money they're making. There's no outline. There's no plan. And it's just very loose. And this is where it gets really dangerous for the organization is it's a generic compensation plan, which means here's your base. Here's your bonus per sale. Now go. And what's happening is that when you do that, you're offering incentives and you're incentivizing for production. Make as many widgets as you can, and I will pay you for as many widgets as I can. Nothing about the quality of the widgets, the consistency of the widgets, what kind of widgets it is, just make sales, and then I will pay you for that. And then what usually happens is you end up with a very, very wide range of compliance, wide range of issues, usually a lot of deals that may cancel because you're just incentivizing for pure numbers. And when you do that, humans are going to default to their human nature. We all do that. We're all defaulted to whatever Maslow's hierarchy of need we're currently living in our brain. And incentives are thrown out there. All of us will find the easiest way to achieve an incentive in life. It's just our human primal survival nature. And so when you set up a very basic comp plan, hold on, because you're probably not going to financially like the results out the other end as an organization.
No. And I think that's something you need to think about from the off, from day one, because you get what you pay for first and foremost, but you need to set those terms. You need to set those expectations and you need to get it right. For me, I've got nothing really much more to add on that. I think you kind of hit every nail on the head there with that, Jason, if I'm honest. But I think please don't send wild dreams. Please don't undersell because you won't get the right people. Be as honest as you can be. But at the same time, don't be afraid to tell them what they can really achieve, even if it's slightly unobtainable. And the reason why I say that is because obviously there are people out there that are going to come in with the skill sets that are going to be able to obtain this. You know, don't set a target or an unrealistic goal of saying, hey, we're going to give you all of this money, but you're going to have to work 40 hours overtime to do that, because that's not realistic. But if you've got somebody who's coming in there doing their 40 hours and can achieve those sales and can achieve maybe, a few hours overtime, or they're just short and they go, if I throw in 3 or 4 hours worth of OT, I'm going to be able to hit that target and make that kind of money. So again, remember, it kind of boils down to, everybody uses the term, the smarter targets and smarter way of thinking. Achievable? Yes. Stretched? Yes. Unobtainable and unrealistic? No. Stay away from them. That's my sense on that one.
Yeah. If we're talking about the specifics, like with that, I think that's always important. One thing I started doing a really long time ago in organizations and then now advising people to do is I have literal printouts in the recruiting interview process of compensations for a given period. So whether it's a weekly game, a 2-week game, a monthly game, whatever's being played on the bonus side, because some people, they might receive their bonuses after a month of performance. Some it might be weekly. So whatever that looks like, obviously with names redacted, but showing, I love to show how long somebody's been an employee, because again, it's great to say, Kim over in the corner, she's crushing it. Yeah, well, she's been here for 8 years. She can do it with her eyes closed. Like, that's not fair to say, okay, you're new and you're going to hit those numbers. Like, that's not going to happen. It's going to take you maybe your 10,000 hours. Who knows? But it's going to take you a while. So how long have they been there? How many hours did they work in that period? Because like you said, did they do it in 40? Did they do it in 80? Did they do it in 50? Yeah. Right. And then you let that person decide. And then how much they made, how many deals they close, how much they make, and then show everybody. And then I'll usually sort it from high to low. And then I'll just let people, they're like, well, how much can I make? I was like, well, it depends on where you want to be in this list. That's totally up to you. Here's the top, here's the bottom, here's the middle. And that's up to you. And that's where I leave it. I'm not saying you can make this. I said, it's up to you. It depends on how good you are and how much effort you want to put into it.
I remember my very first call center role. On the phones, sales agent, they were that confident on the average earning of anybody they bought through. The numbers actually came to fruition as well. They actually worked out to the top, wow, which was great. I was living, I was young, I was living the dream, I was making the money. I was loving it. But they were that confident, but you got paid 3 months in arrears on your commission because they wanted to make sure that the sale stuck, and it was a 90-day retention on the sale, which first and foremost is a great way of looking at it. But they said, obviously you're not going to earn commission for the first 3 months. Now, most companies in that remit will say 3 months base salary, then you earn commission. they actually gave you 25% extra base salary for the first 3 months until you earn your commission.
Sure.
And they didn't need to do that. And I love that. I think that was a really good way of looking at it. And I don't know whether that was a way to get everybody on board. I don't know whether it was a way to kind of ramp up quickly for the staff they needed and then kind of whittle down to who they didn't need. But yeah, I mean, I knew what my base salary was. That's what I went in for the job for. And the commission for me was a bonus. So when I was getting an extra 25% of my salary every month, I was like, winning.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of sales organizations, a lot of things do that as a draw. So it's a draw against that commission. And so you get that money. But once you start earning the commission, then that goes away because you're no longer getting that. And that way you can get higher quality people who, again, if you didn't do that 25% bump, there's a lot of people who are like, I can't live off or afford just the base for 3 months, right? Like that's a tougher situation. It's harder to find people sometimes who are okay with, you know, nothing or minimums. Like a lot of sales organizations, it's like it could be minimum wage-ish or very close to it. All the money's in the bonus. And if it takes too long to make the bonuses and commissions, then you're hoping for that person who can survive long enough. And so I think that's brilliant. I think that's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I think we're going to have to come to a natural close now. We're hitting 2 o'clock already, and there is so much more we can talk about. But we've got
a ton
of topics to go through, especially when we really go into the onboarding and the training section. That list for both of us is bigger and bigger every single week.
It is. We just keep adding to it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're going to get that. I think this is going to be like a 3-episode list as we kind of hit into training. But we've got a couple of points just to finish off on recruitment, which we'll touch on next week as we kind of segue into training. But don't forget to leave comments, leave likes. And if you're watching afterwards, also just as a reminder, and I know Jason and I repeat, you know, there is no call to action. This is not a sales cast in any way, shape or form. We are here to help you become better at what you do. And like we said, we're going to be going live with websites, which is currently in design at the moment. Social media, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook pages are live. There are no followers. There is no one on there. So if you would like to follow us, please just search for Call Center Confidence on any of your social media platforms and you will find us. And of course, don't forget, we also have our LinkedIn business page of Call Center Confidence, which they can sign up to, can't they, Jason?
And just to clarify, we do have 2 followers on the Instagram and the Facebook because it's you and me following our own business. So we do have 2. We're rolling. Yes. Thank you, Oliver, for setting all those up. And if you're listening to this after the fact or if you're watching on the screen, again, you can reach out Oliver at The Catalyst with 2 T's. So awesome. TheCatalyst.com. Also, you can find both of us on LinkedIn. And then my email is jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. So if any comments, thoughts, ideas of what you're seeing recruiting, that onboarding topics, anything that you find that works well, we'd love to hear it. We could share it on future shows. Or if you have questions, anything that comes up and you're just curious about the stuff that we're talking about, both of us love chatting about this. Obviously, we're both sales and call center nerds, which for the longest time, I wouldn't admit that. But then I realized that the more I did my previous podcast, I'm like, I'm just a nerd about this stuff. So we'll talk about it all day, every day. It's super easy for us. And again, we're here, you know, we're going to be doing this every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. GMT for our families all over the place. And that's it for episode 4. Oliver, thank you again for being here with me on this and setting up all the technology side. You're so great at that and building up our social media.
Hey, don't worry. We'll be hitting all the platforms soon. I was looking into Clubhouse. We'll be hopefully from next week, if I can get it off the ground, we'll be live on Clubhouse at the same time, trying to figure out how we can go live on Instagram at the same time. But we're going to be not moving away from LinkedIn because I know we still get a big hit from LinkedIn, and our after followers and after watches is a big number on that platform because obviously not everybody is free to watch it at this time. But we are going to try and hit everybody on multi-platforms over the next few weeks, over the next few months. We're going to go live on the website and everything else. So you'll be able to access this content any way you want and chat to us on any platform as well at the same time. So from me, have a great week. Stay safe. And I look forward to seeing you all next Wednesday.
Thanks, Oliver. That's it for this episode. We'll see you next week.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.